Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station. Broadcasting from atop Signal Hill, where it's 33 degrees. We're looking for scattered rain and snow showers this afternoon, turning to rain showers tonight. Coming up at 12 noon straight up, our 41st weekly update from the Kodiak Emergency Services Organization.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us again today, December 31st, 2020. My name is Mike Twenge, the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Director. The Emergency Services Council met again this morning, and here are updates from that meeting. We identified numerous local organizations available to assist those in need of food, shelter, utility assistance, clothing, etc. To reach out to local faith-based groups, the Brother Francis Shelter, the Salvation Army to arrange for assistance. The COVID vaccination plan is scheduled by the Alaska Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee and the Alaska COVID Vaccine Task Force. Groups that will be eligible for the vaccine soon are individuals who fall within the Tier 3 will be able to schedule a vaccination appointment at identified Tier 3 vaccination clinics. Tier 3 vaccination clinic appointments can be made starting December 30th at covidvax.alaska.gov. That's covidvax.alaska.gov. Vaccination clinics will not begin until January 4th. Additional clinic appointments will be added as additional vaccine is available. So this tier, Tier 3, includes workers in healthcare settings at highest risk of contracting COVID-19 who are essential to the healthcare infrastructure and who regularly provide healthcare services that cannot be postponed or provided remotely. To be a qualified worker in a healthcare setting, you must meet all of the following criteria. You need to have direct patient contact or have direct contact with infectious materials from patients and provide essential services in a healthcare setting that cannot be offered remotely or performed via telework, and provide a service in a healthcare setting that cannot be postponed without detrimental impact to the patient's short-term or long-term health outcomes. This tier applies to licensed, certified, and other workers in healthcare settings in the state of Alaska who meet the above criteria. This includes direct support professionals, provide personnel care or home and community-based services, laboratory technicians, phlebotomists, and workers performing COVID testing. For further guidance in defining this tier, review the Alaska Vaccine Allocation Advisory Committee notes. All of this information is available on the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services website, or again at covidvax.alaska.gov. To date, Safeway and Dr. Kohler are the only officially registered Phase 1A Tier 3 vaccine providers for Kodiak. This is based on the steps and processes to facilitate this identification. Providence Kodiak Island Medical Clinic has begun vaccinations for frontline caregivers, EMS, LifeMed, and long-term care residents. Currently, they are not able to provide vaccinations to the general public. Public vaccinations will be made available based on the state vaccination distribution plan, which I just described. Providence Kodiak, Kodiak Island Medical Clinic is serving as a depot facility for vaccine storage for the state, but all allocations of the vaccine are determined at the state level. Total statewide vaccinations given at last reporting is 13,271. Of those 13,000, 793 of these were Moderna. The rest were Pfizer. Today's COVID Kodiak case count is 6, and we currently have 87 active known positive cases on the island. Hospitalizations are steady at 2 admitted patients right now, with a total of 37 hospitalizations. We're seeing decreasing daily case counts, which is great news, but we are just 6 days from Christmas, and we really need to hope for the same in the next few weeks. Everyone's efforts have kept us from a real difficult situation of long-term hunker down and overwhelming our healthcare system, as we are seeing in other states. The Emergency Operations Center has been active now for 290 days, dating back to March. I'd like to give you a brief summary of the actions Kodiak has taken to keep this virus from controlling this community. We tried to keep as many infections from coming in as possible. Our public information office kept up to date with state and local regulations to guide travelers with state protocols. The Emergency Services Council set policy and met each week or more often to guide the Emergency Operations Center with response and mitigation measures. With cooperation of the Kodiak Island Borough School District, Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center, Kodiak Fire Department, and the Emergency Operations Center, together we set up an alternate care facility for expected patients needing medical care. For those infections that did make it to Kodiak, we supported a robust testing strategy to identify new cases. Through CANA, KCHC, Providence, and the 2 other clinics, over 15,000 have been tested for this virus. Thankfully, this community tested regularly and isolated when they became known positive. The harbor monitored 183 incoming vessels through communication and required the harbor use agreement. This kept vessels in quarantine until they were determined to be COVID-free. Businesses were asked to complete safety mitigation plans to protect their staff and customers. We issued over 145 of those to date. The Emergency Operations Center and the Chamber of Commerce worked with these businesses and agencies to continue dialogue of needs and accomplishments in protecting our community. The local media has worked hard to inform the community by way of radio messaging, conversations with local experts, and stories about this virus. Kodiak Economic Development Corporation was formed to assist businesses with pass-through financial aid from local government CARES Act stimulus. The Emergency Operations Center, with assistance from the Kodiak Community Support Team and the Kodiak Arts Council, distributed over 15,000 face masks. Kodiak Island Borough School District distributed meals to students daily without missing a step. And we have held 41 consecutive Thursday community updates, sharing the latest COVID information from the week. All of this in addition to other measures businesses and agencies took to protect one another from infection. Regardless of the politics surrounding the virus, Kodiak has stood strong and cooperated to protect our fellow residents. Although the vaccine will not be widely available to everyone immediately, it will bring some relief to the frontline healthcare workers. And until everyone has had a chance to choose vaccination, we all need to continue the recommended safety precautions, such as wear a mask, stand back from others, and wash those hands. These are still preventative measures, and let's continue doing this. At this point, it has become commonplace. Let's not give up now. The health officials are identifying a more virulent clade, saying it is more contagious than anything we have known about the virus so far. So keep your distance outside of your household to avoid further spread. We have New Year celebrations beginning tonight, but it is not a reason to be careless with our social bubbles and risk another COVID spike. So stay smart and stay safe. Don't become a close contact. School is scheduled to resume in-person classroom studies January 11th. Let's all pull together to see that this stays on schedule. And then about January 15th, the Emergency Services Council will make an announcement about our capacity limits and our community risk level. Again, let's pull together to bring us back to yellow, or if possible, green status in the near future. Mask up, stand back, and wash those hands with soap and bubbles. We will return next Thursday for another community update. And from all of us in emergency operations, we wish you a safe and healthy new year.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
As we just heard from the Emergency Services Organization, vaccination efforts are underway in Kodiak, and they are following the statewide distribution plan. Dr. John Kohler of Kodiak Island Ambulatory Care says there's a good enough supply. They just received under 1,000 Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccines, and they are in cold storage at Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center, and they've begun to be distributed to medical providers. While Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center wouldn't give specifics on the distribution process, it did say that a meaningful number of frontline healthcare workers had received the vaccine, along with some assisted living facility residents. The Kodiak Area Native Association, or CANA, says some of their healthcare employees have received vaccinations. Some CANA specialists have gone to some villages around the island, and with the help of a Coast Guard MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter crew, they're distributing the vaccine to healthcare workers off the road system. Kodiak Community Healthcare Center staff have received vaccine supplies as well, with their doses stored at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Kodiak Island Ambulatory Care staff have not yet received vaccines, according to Dr. Kohler, but that process will begin within the next few days. He says the ambulatory care facility has a deep freezer that could store up to 30,000 doses of the vaccine, but currently all doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine are stored at the hospital. The Coast Guard is assuming responsibility for vaccinating its own staff. They did not respond to requests for comment in time for this story, but the Department of Defense facilities around the world have received doses of the Moderna vaccine, which does not require extreme cold storage. It's unknown if Air Station Kodiak has the infrastructure necessary to store the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine at the required temperature of minus 70 degrees Celsius. Long-term vaccination plans remain a little unclear for Kodiak and indeed for the rest of Alaska. There's no set date on when more shipments of the vaccine will arrive in Kodiak or when those vaccines will begin to be distributed to the general public. According to guidelines set by the state government, healthcare workers, long-term care residents and staff, and first responders are the primary focus for this phase of the vaccine distribution. Six new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough of COVID-19. Two new cases were tested on the 29th, and four new cases were tested on the 30th. Of these, five are close contact, and one is travel-related. This brings the current case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 912. 87 cases are classified as active locally. To date, there have been a total number of 37 local hospitalizations and five deaths associated with COVID-19. Two patients are currently hospitalized in Kodiak. And of course, as we ring in the new year, please continue to be mindful of the people included in your social bubble. Limit gatherings to only members of your household if possible, and consider small, socially distanced outdoor gatherings. And don't forget to wear a mask. Scientists are still digging for answers about the low abundance of adult razor clams on the east side of Cook Inlet. Meantime, charter companies are taking passengers over to the west side, where razors abound. Sabine Pooks in Kenai has more.
The west side is like Deep Creek and a Clam Gulch were 20, 24 years ago.
That's Ernie Kirby. He's owned Bottom Line Charters in Nanilchik for almost three decades. In response to the crash of clam populations, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game closed east side beaches to personal and sport use clamming in 2014. It announced last week it will close those beaches again in 2021. At one time, the 80 miles of shoreline from the mouth of the Kenai River to the Homer Spit was home to the most popular clam fishery in Cook Inlet. That includes the beaches of Clam Gulch, a town named for its abundance of razor clams. Scientists aren't sure why the crash initially happened about a decade ago. What they do know is that stocks aren't rebounding, says Mike Booze, the Lower Cook Inlet Sport Fish Area Manager for Fish and Game. He says the department has successfully incorporated new juvenile clams into the area, a process known as recruitment. But as they reach adulthood, between 3 and 5 years old, they're dying off.
Unfortunately, it's not a perfect recovery. You know, during that time or transitioning through that time, growth has been really poor for razor clams, particularly in 2017 and 2018. The adult survival of razor clams through that time hasn't been very good. And so, yes, you're getting new clams, but they're not growing and they're not surviving for the population to rebuild to what it was historically.
This high rate of mortality among adult clams is likely due to a confluence of factors, including environmental stressors and changes in habitat. The instability of ocean water temperatures could be part of the equation, Booz says.
Overall, you know, climate change, or, you know, that's only one component of it. You know, climate change doesn't cause clams to leave the beach. It definitely influences probably their growth rate or the primary productivity of plankton in Cook Inlet and how that likely affects razor clam abundances on these beaches.
The closures have driven more people to the beaches on the west side. Off the road system, those shores are only accessible via boat or plane. Kirby does a 30-mile ride to Crescent River Drainage, south of Polly Creek, with his passengers. It takes about an hour and 15 minutes from Nanilchik. He's always taken his passengers to the west side, but since the closure on the east side, many others are too.
A lot more of the guys in the Nanilchik are starting to go over there.
That's also where the commercial clammers, like Nikiski's Pacific Alaska Shellfish, get their stock. There are no harvest limits on the west side. Kirby says he's not worried about the area getting overfished because there are enough clams to go around. Again, it's not completely clear to Fish and Game why the west side seems to be doing much better than its neighbor. And more generally, it's hard to know how the dwindling numbers on the shore of the peninsula stack up with their counterparts on other Pacific shores. Razor clams in the east part of Cook Inlet are more studied than others, due partly to the robustness of the fishery.
Further south in Oregon and Washington would be probably the next place where razor clams are, you know, really studied well enough to, you know, make a comparison between East Cook Inlet. And razor clams in Oregon and Washington right now are doing great.
The department continues to monitor clam stocks on both shores and submitted a proposal this year to develop a management plan for East Cook Inlet razor clams. Currently, there's no management plan that would regulate harvests in the case of a reopening. Kirby says he trusts the department to protect the fishery.
I would want them to show at least two consecutive years of growth. Good sustained growth. I'm losing business if they keep it closed, but in the long run, it's going to be better for everybody.
That department's proposal will be discussed at the board's scheduled meeting in March. You can read it in the online version of this story. For KDLL, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The pandemic has been devastating for many in Alaska's small business community. And even if it's not devastating for all, it's been really hard for most. But there are certain businesses that unexpectedly fulfilled particular pandemic-related demands and ended up seeing growth in sales. Alaska Public Media's Abby Collins has more from a few of those businesses.
Anchorage House of Hobbies in the city's Spinard neighborhood has been really busy this year.
I don't know that I've ever had to work quite so hard.
Ryan Raffues is the store's owner.
It's been an exercise in flexibility.
When the pandemic began to take hold in Anchorage, Raffues sprang into action and started planning for slow business.
When I saw what was going to happen in March, you know, I started planning what I was going to do with downtime. And I had a list of all kinds of projects around the store that I was going to take care of. And when we did close, I took a couple days off.
But then
But then, everything quickly found that people needed things to do, and they were constantly calling and messaging and emailing.
It turned into the best year ever for sales. Rathews says 2019 was already a record year, and now sales are up 10%. Rathews is also on the board of directors for the National Retail Hobby Stores Association, and he says business has been booming at hobby shops across the country. He thinks it has to do with people being stuck at home. Those people who still have money to spend don't have many places to spend it.
My family didn't go on a trip to Disneyland like we planned, so that's thousands of dollars that we planned on spending that we didn't spend. And I know there are many, many families who had the same thing. You know, they didn't go places. They aren't going to movies to spend little bits. They aren't spending quite as much at restaurants. They aren't doing all these other things, but they can stay at home and build models and play with RC cars and planes.
While it's been a good year for the House of Hobbies, Rathews recognizes that hasn't been the case for others in Anchorage's business community. This month, he's been doing what he can to support local restaurants by buying his employees lunch from a different one each day.
My family, we definitely believe in the community aspect of what we do and how important it is for our neighbors to be doing well in order for us to do well. We're very much all connected.
Down the road at Bosco's, store manager Eric Helmick says sales have been surprisingly strong this year. Once solely a comic book store, Bosco's now sells many different products, things like board games, role-play games, and sports cards. This year, Helmick says puzzles and games have been among the products selling particularly well.
We had to kind of switch gears on a few things. Normally, we don't go through a lot of puzzles, so we had to kind of scramble and check with a bunch of distributors and find out if they had extra puzzles and see what they could get us.
The store also has an events room, but hasn't been able to hold any during the pandemic.
Pre-COVID, we would have, you know, all kinds of games going on there. You know, Mondays, or we'd have Pokemon or Star Wars X-Wing, and then there would be Yu-Gi-Oh! On Tuesdays, and there'd be several days of Magic the Gathering.
Now Helmick says the events room is being used as extra retail space to give shoppers more room in the store. Helmick says he thinks at least some of the store's success comes from people's desire to escape the real world for a bit.
A lot of people who are, they're just wanting to escape reality, so they want comics to read or graphic novels, or they want to play a role-playing game just to get away from the real world for a few hours.
Like Rathews, Helmick says now more than ever, it's important to support Alaska's businesses and shop local. In Anchorage, I'm Abby Collins.
For the next 2 weeks, Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration must treat Jeff Landfield and the Alaska landmine the same way it treats other media in the state. They have to invite him to a press conference. The temporary order came from U.S. District Court Judge Josh Kindred after a hearing on Wednesday. Kindred said Landfield's legal team and evidence they've shown so far persuaded him that the landmine would likely win its lawsuit against the state. Landfield sued Dunleavy and members of his administration over access to press conferences. In the lawsuit, Landfield details a year of the governor's office refusing to invite him or the Alaska landmine to press events. He and his lawyers say it's a violation of his rights as a journalist. During Wednesday's hearing, the state argued that Landfield is not a member of the, quote, traditional media, unquote. It's not clear exactly what that phrase means, but Kindred ordered that the state must treat him as it does other members of the traditional media, however they're defining it. The temporary restraining order is in effect until January 13th, when the next hearing is scheduled. It's not clear if Dunleavy plans to hold any press conferences in that time period. His spokesperson didn't immediately respond to a message asking if there were any scheduled.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Feed babies seafood starting at 6 months. More on new diet guidelines after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at amc.org.
Seafood got a huge boost this week with the unveiling of new dietary guidelines through 2025 that emphasize Americans need to eat more fish. And for the first time since the guidelines began in 1985, recommendations focus on pregnant women and infants and toddlers. They say that seafood is the only food rich in omega-3 DHA, which during pregnancy enhances a baby's brain and eye development. Dr. Tom Brenna is a professor of pediatrics and nutrition at Dell Medical School at the University of Texas.
The brain, the retina, and the eye are really omega-3 organs. You can say that as calcium is to the bones, omega-3 is to the brain.
The new diet guidelines, provided every 5 years by the USDA and Health and Human Services, also recommend that babies should eat seafood starting at 6 months. And by introducing seafood early, it can help shape healthy food choices and turn kids into lifelong fish lovers. The National Fisheries Institute points out that 94% of American kids and 80% of adults don't eat the long recommended 2 seafood meals per week. Brenna agrees that the biggest nutritional group missing the mark is U.S. baby food makers.
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know what the problem is. Companies sell what the consumers demand, and apparently we have not done the kind of job that we should have in educating consumers in what they ought to be demanding for their kids. And this may be a reason why they're not consuming seafood when they get older.
I think we have a major effect here that ought to be heralded from the rooftops.
Maybe we should have a contest to find a nice tagline that would identify seafood in the same way as got milk or the beef, it's what's for dinner.
Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Caught fish. Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 31st and last day of December, the year 2020. Sun rose today at 9:54 this morning, and it will set again at 4:34 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 39 minutes of precious daylight. That is a gain of 1 minute and 31 seconds compared to yesterday. Presently 33 degrees in Kodiak. Our record high is 46. That was set in 1980, 84, and 2019. Our record low is -6. That was set in 1916. Looking at our local district tides, we have a high tide coming up at 2:14 p.m. That will be a 9.95-foot tide here on the east side, followed by a low tide at 9:05 p.m. That will be a -1.1-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Euganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 2:49 p.m. That will be a 16-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:32 this evening of -1.8 feet. 33 degrees right now, and we're looking for scattered showers tonight, mainly after 9 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of about 36. East winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. For New Year's Day, scattered showers, cloudy skies, high near 40. Northeast wind to 15 miles per hour, gusting as high as 20. Chance of rain on New Year's Day, 50%. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 974 millibar low will move into the southern Gulf this evening. Its front will extend across the western and central Gulf through Friday. Resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, small craft advisory through Friday. East winds to 30 knots right now and seas to 18 feet. Will build to 14 feet this afternoon. And for tonight, look for east winds to continue at 30 knots. Seas building up to 17 feet tonight on the east side. Tomorrow on the east side, northeast wind 20, seas coming down to 13 feet. Over on the west side, the Shelikof, small craft advisory through Friday. Northeast wind to 25 knots right now and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast wind to 25 knots and seas to 8 feet. Chiniac and Marmot Bays. Northeast wind to 10 knots, increasing to 15 knots this afternoon. Seas to 5 feet in Chiniac Bay and to 7 feet in Marmot Bay tonight.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.